You're listening to Talk of the Rock with your host, Kayla DeRoche. And today we're going to have a show about firefighting in Kodiak. We have Chief James Mulligan from the Kodiak Fire Department with us here today, Chief Howard Rue of the Bayside Volunteer Fire Department, and Jason Wagner from Bayside. So thank you, gentlemen, for joining us today. This is going to be exciting. So can you give a little background about how you got into this career? Why don't we start with yourself?
Well, I'm Howard Rue, and I've been a fireman since 1968. I took the job here in Kodiak just about a year ago. Through my career, I've seen a lot of changes, been in several different fire departments, and retired from Western Springs, Illinois, and was hired here in Kodiak Island Borough for the Bayside Fire Department. So it's been a long, long change that's I've seen through the years.
All right, and Mr. Wagner?
Yeah, I'm a volunteer, not a paid employee of Bayside Fire Department. I've been volunteering about a little under 5 years. And for me, firefighting was kind of more of a something I just kind of evolved into, because I've always liked to help people and be involved with, you know, excitement and adventure and that sort of stuff. I'm a former military Marine. And but then when I came up here, I started getting medical, like hands-on medical training. And I thought, well, you know, if I want to, you can learn first aid over and over and over, but until you actually use it, you know, on a person, you know, you don't really know it. And so I started volunteering as a EMT or a medic with Bayside, and then slowly evolved into the fire side too, because, you know, we're a lot of the older generations of firefighters are, you know, retiring, and we need to bring in young, healthy, strong bodies that can, you know, handle the strenuous work. So I started doing firefighting now too.
All right.
Jim Mulligan. Let's see. I started with the city in 1999 when I was retiring out of the Coast Guard. I did 21 years in the military. And then my grandfather was a career firefighter in Baltimore City. And it was one of the things that he looked at me and said, this is your path, young man. And it was very good. Firefighting is the greatest job in the world. You know, at the city, we're paid staff members, but we get paid to do a job that's just absolutely fantastic. We help people all the time. It is. It's the best job in the world. It's challenging. Never let down by, you know, going out and being what's happening. And we have to improvise and adapt to what the scene is. And that's what makes, to me, keeps the interest in it. So it's not a job you show up every day and doing the same thing all the time. It constantly changes. And it's all revolving around helping people. It's about service. And that's something that I've been about all my life since, obviously, I joined the military and worked my way through.
All right. And when I got here, I had never thought in terms of volunteer versus employee. I had never even thought much about firefighting in general. But when you get into an island like this, every team becomes important, especially with situations like the Chiniac fire that we had a while ago. So just to start from the beginning, could you talk about the different stations on the island and what districts they take care of?
Well, to start with, the city fire department is 76 years old this year. We were put together in, 1941 is when they first started with this department. Later on, the citizens in Service District 1 and Women's Bay District elected to form their own volunteer fire department to help cover the fire need. The city of Kodiak still provides the ambulance service for the road system. So whether the Coast Guard brings them in on a helicopter, they come in from a village on a medevac, or it's a general call out into Woman's Bay, Bayside, or all the way out to Chiniac, the city provides that ambulance service. We provide three advanced life support ambulance for the road system and response. From there, Howard, you want to take over for what you do for Bayside?
Well, I was brought to Bayside as the fire chief. Last couple of years had been a little tenuous. From my first day here, truly the first day I got here, Jim came and we met, and our ideals and ideas are the same. We have really come together to form a good alliance, also with Bill St. Clair out at the Coast Guard and Dale Rice and Dave Conrad at Woman's Bay. But I think Jim and I have a fantastic relationship from what it had been several years ago. We're doing training. We're starting to really work with each other, taking different portions of fires and emergency incidents. So with that, with the Firefighter One program that we're putting in, I'm also, hold my breath in saying this, but I'm also maybe providing people for him in the future. So this is nothing, in the last year has been nothing but a win-win. Bayside is taken care of several problems that presented themselves to me, such as the ISO rating, which had been lost due to things not being done. We were able to recoup that. We had some OSHA issues. Those have been taken care of. We've started to grow, and I'm looking always for more volunteers to help make the fire department grow. So this last year has just been nothing, just busy, 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 but just full of good things.
Can you talk a little bit more about some of the changes that have happened under your supervision? Because you actually, when you first got here, you came and you interviewed with me, and it seemed like there was a lot of possibility on the horizon.
We've really, like I said, I was faced with several challenges as soon as I got here. I think one of the biggest ones was to repair relationships. The fire chiefs now actually sit down probably every other month, have monthly meetings or bi-monthly meetings, tell each other actually what's going on. For me, I'm looking at getting a brand new engine and a new tender, which is a water tender. Our station, we're doing a lot of cleanup, building new new sections of the department, adding windows and so on. So it's in a constant change. We're just constantly getting bigger and better, I think.
What about you, Chief Mulligan? What have been some developments within your station?
Well, we're always challenged. There's only 13 of us total. We have one administrative assistant and 13 highly trained and highly motivated professionals at the station. And we're running average 1,100 calls a year. I checked the numbers today. We're at 945 calls of service. We only count calls of service when we roll wheels to go out on a call. That's not including fire inspections, daily maintenance, and all the things that the firefighters have to do to keep the station running. We have to train constantly because we do multiple disciplines. We do firefighting, both land-based and shipboard firefighting. We provide a level A hazmat team. We're one of the seven in the state. We are a high-angle, low-angle rope rescue technical squad. We do confined space rescue, ice rescue, and open water rescue. When you add all those up, there's just a tremendous amount of constant training that take place there. The biggest challenges that we're really facing right now is one, obviously we have a station that's in very, very bad shape. Earthquakes are hitting us. The walls are cracking. It's unsupported. And the concern is that we get a sizable shaker and the station comes down on top of our firefighters and our equipment. We can't get out. So I know the cities, we're working on that process now and it's working its way through, but that's one of my biggest ones. Apparatus is always a challenge because of the nature. They're very expensive. We've just purchased a new ambulance this year to replace our oldest ambulance. And then we are working, I just got a grant and I'm working on replacing a second ambulance. From there, it's a matter of keeping our employees trained, equipped, and motivated to respond for everything that happens coming down the road.
Yeah, I'd be curious to hear the criteria for being a fireman and if it's different for a volunteer fireman versus a regularly paid fireman. And I'm not exactly sure what that would imply. Like maybe they can do 10 push-ups or 50. So, yeah, could you tell me a little bit about what the criteria is?
Well, the basic criteria comes down to, one, they have to pass a health physical to make sure that they're healthy and cleared by a doctor to be able to do the job, whether you're volunteer or you're paid staff. The NFPA, National Fire...
Prevention,
thank you. The association, they put out the standards for firefighters, and that's what we follow. We want to make sure that people are able to do these jobs. They are very strenuous. Number one killer of firefighters in the country is heart attacks, and that's justifiably so when you see what they do on the job. So once they finish that, as far as the level of training will be based off of what they're being picked up for. For me at the station, they have to be an EMT at a minimum. from there, we can train them in the firefighting side of the house. But the length of time to become an EMT is just something I can't put into the training schedule. I need that to be able to plug right into an ambulance and put them to work. We're working with Bayside right now to put together a Firefighter 1 class. Firefighter 1 is a state certification that basically it's the minimum level of training that a firefighter needs to do the job safely and effectively. And it's something that's been missing for a lot of years. So one of the things I've worked with Chief Rue here is that we will sponsor. We're certified by the state, the city is, to provide the training, test them out, and they earn their certification. And I think it's a really, really good step forward because it helps our volunteers as well have the knowledge and be able to do the job safely, because fighting fires is as dangerous for a volunteer as it is for a paid staff member, and they don't deserve anything less.
Right.
And in for that is that not only are we getting the Firefighter 1 training, but we get this done, we're going to offer an EMT class. And with that, Jim will take my people and say, thanks, Chief. But it's good stuff. This is where Bayside helps the paid system, good working relationship, and I just need to keep filling the blank spaces. So we offer a really beginning basics that can help somebody become a paid fireman somewhere.
And the thing that Jim mentioned kind of earlier is about, you know, if there's a big earthquake and the firehouse comes down. In a big earthquake, they're going to need the firehouse more than anything in this whole town. Same thing if there's a big fire like we had the previous this year with the cannery fire. The city needed Bayside's help. And for them, they want to invest in us, provide training so that when we show up to help them at a big call, because we're such a small island, everyone, whether it be, you know, minor disasters or major disasters, everyone on this island has to help each other. And so, they need Bayside to come in. You know, if they have 13 men, that's not including people on vacation, injured or anything like that. They need Bayside to come in. We need Women's Bay, which is out in Bell's Flats, to come in. We need the Coast Guard to come in. And so to have a good working relationship and have a good basis of training for all the firefighters, both volunteer and, you know, even the city's probationaries, is critical.
Yeah, go ahead.
I would like to say that on the cannery fire, where I came from, we would have had 100 guys from different stations at that fire. I think, what do we have, Jim, 18 working that night? A total of 18?
Yeah, about that, yeah.
And the amount of work that not only the city did, but the Coast Guard and Bayside did, it made me feel so proud that these guys just do what they can with the limited resources. And for me, that's one of the things that Jim and Frank Dorner, Dave Conrad, we all talk about, to how can we do more with less and make it work. And I think we're on the right track with the training and so on. So
I understand that this class is new.
Started last week was our first class.
The Firefighter 1 class is a Pro Board and IFSTA certified class, which is our two nationally accredited classes, and it's 150 hours of intense training, both classroom and practicality, taking them out onto the field. Okay, not only do they talk about how a fire hose operates, now they have to perform that task. And so it helps them learn the limitations of the equipment they use, the limitations of themselves, and gain their knowledge in everything from building construction, fire behavior, what fire is, how it works, how it behaves, so that when they are in a structure fighting a fire, unlike any of the movies that you see, you can't see.
You ain't seeing nothing.
You don't see anything. You're blind. The smoke banks down to the floor. You're wearing a mask, and
it's
all
hot.
You see, you can't see the hand in front of your face. And so you have to rely on your knowledge of buildings, how they're built, rely on your knowledge of fire behavior, and then knowing the limitations of the hose you're carrying and how to employ that water properly and effectively. That comes from this training. And so that's why it's really an important training, and it's an awesome step to take forward to improve our volunteers' abilities to do this. And I'm 100% behind it. It's why when Chief Rue showed up, we met together, and I told him, we'll sponsor it. I believe it that much. All they got to do is show up. We go through the class. And it's going to take a little while to help fit the volunteer schedule because we don't want to knock out 150 hours of their time. We're going to spread it over a six-month period of time so that they have the ability to take classes, meet the practicals, and then if they miss a class because of their normal job or life, there are makeup times built into the class, so it helps them come in and make up because we want them to succeed. We want them to get the certification.
So with that being said, we've completed our first week. So if anybody's out there interested, possibly following up on this, it's not too late to come and see Chief Mulliken down at the city or myself out at Bayside. We can give you a heads up. We go to class 1 week. We're off a week just to give everybody a break. So, as I said, it's not too late. We try to make this fitting people's schedules as we can, and it's going to be a great thing for both departments.
Jason, are you taking the class?
Yeah, and I was going to mention the which is, you know, I've already been a volunteer for several years, but everything I've learned has been on the job, and sometimes it's good to sit down and go through the book side. Oh, I didn't know about this particular type of nozzle that we don't carry, but I was going to mention our first week of the class, you would think maybe we're going to learn about fire behavior or water. The very first thing we learn and teach our new firefighters is about the long tradition of the service of firefighting and the ethics of being a firefighter and what our responsibilities are. Like when you become a firefighter, it's not just a water technician or something. You're becoming, you know, a major part of, you know, your community, and people are going to look up to you. And that, to me, sometimes could be the most rewarding part of being a firefighter is, you know, being a part of something that's been going on for thousands of years, doing something that's, you know, literally, you know, you can help people. But when you're a firefighter, you have your hands on that person. You're saving that person or their home or their children or their pets. You know, that you can't beat that as far as, you know, volunteer opportunities. So for the volunteers, it's tough because, you know, we mentioned it's a 150-hour course, and that's just the bare minimum to be able to act, you know, work, you know, as a, you know, basic understanding of what you're doing. And, you know, just like any volunteer organization, KMXT or anything, you know, people's time is, people have less time to volunteer, it seems like, these days. You know, everyone's so busy. And so the community, where we draw our recruits from, their time's going down. But then the professionalism of our service, the new equipment, the new types of fires, you know, different, you know, building constructions, everything has changed over the years. The time required to be a trained firefighter goes up, you know, nonstop training to maintain, you know, what they have to do. And that hurts. And that's one reason that we wanted to come on here is because, you know, you were mentioning earlier that, you know, you pick up the phone, you hit 911, you expect someone to show up, but it's not magic. You know, for the city, they have to be funded, you know, to be able to have the apparatus and the equipment and everything needed. And from the Bayside, funding is not our worst part. We have a pretty good tax base in our service district. It's people. You know, we need people who can take time out of their busy life and volunteer, you know, who want to do it, who can, you know, meet the intense physical challenges, who can meet the tough ethical challenges, you know, we can't just take, can't have a criminal record and that sort of stuff. So it's a challenge, and it's not getting easier.
And I like to say that I'm very, very lucky with the people that I have, the qualifications and the dedication of the guys that have been there since I started, and also the new members that have come, because as I'm competing for everybody's time. I have to have a place that people want to come to, want to be a part of. They want to be a tooth in the gear, teamwork, and I have to make it enjoyable, and their time value based. So, because I'm competing with families, soccer games, wife wanting you to go shopping, or if a woman wants to join, I welcome you folks as well. So I'm competing with everybody's time, and I just want to, you know, make it a great place for people to want to be a part of.
The time requirements are no different on the paid staff side. Like I said, there's only 13 of us at the city station, and we're always going back to the station. When a call goes out, an ambulance goes out the road, we have to pull people in off duty to cover the station for that next call. And so that is a constant, it's not a job, it's a lifestyle. And it's one of the things, I've been married for 30, I've been lucky to be married for 30 years to my wife, and she has had to learn to deal with being left at Walmart, being left at Safeway. Oh, we're in a movie. Up, got to go. It's just constant. It never stops. And our calls have gone up. Our volume has gone up. The complexity of the calls have gone up. We deal with everything in the ambulance side of the house, from someone just needing assistance at home to gunshots, stabbings, assaults. You name the calls, the drug overdoses, we deal with all that stuff on a regular basis.
Daily basis.
And it's really, there's no difference between the calls that they're having in Anchorage as the calls we're having here on Kodiak. And we're just doing it with a much smaller service. And that's where the interoperability of the Bayside, Woman's Bay, Coast Guard, and City Station come into play, because the first responder services, which are the outside services, can go to the scene, begin taking care of patients, and we show up with the ambulance, and the medics can come in, take over care of the patient, transport from the scene to the hospital. We have a great staff at Providence. Some stuff is outside the venue of Providence, is here on the island, so they will medevac them off the island. We again come in with the ambulance and we'll transport from the hospital out to the airport to the appropriate medevac service to get them to the care they need, whether they're flying them to Seattle, to the burn center, flying them to Anchorage, all based off of what the docs make that decision on.
Are you both getting your funding from the local governments here?
Right,
City,
yes.
City and borough?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm Fire District 1, and but as Jim said, there's grants out there. I've applied for 2 grants for Bayside that are due this week that have already been submitted to try to get new air packs, and that grant was $230,000 and an event system for the station, which is just under $100,000. So both Jim and I are looking for ways to augment the money that comes in from taxes, so not everything's on the citizens of the borough and the city, but Jim and I both take responsibility to try to do the best, be a cost-efficient and effective organizations, and even though we're sitting here in our white fancy shirts with 5 bugles and all this kind of stuff, when it really comes down to it, we're there because we don't have the 25 guys on shift where we can sit back and just say, today's going to be a great day. I'm reading the newspaper and have a sip of Napoleon wine or something. So I get to do the calls. I work with Jim's guys and the relationship. And I think if the guys at Kodiak Station are listening, I think they'll say that there's been a great change where we actually are working together, trust each other. And I thank Jim for the opportunity to go, trusting me that I can give him quality people on the job.
It might be a good idea for anyone who's listening and getting interested to get a little insight into what your schedule looks like on a daily basis and what kind of time commitment you put in, Jason.
The great thing about Bayside is, since it's volunteer and it's like KMXT, if someone wants to volunteer, they can kind of choose their capacity. You know, someone could volunteer at KMXC and all they would do is go out and help with Run the Rock or something. Bayside's very similar. We have, if you have any sort of desire to contribute, you don't have to be going in the door and chopping it down with an axe. You know, we have a group called CARES, which is a radio team, and a lot of retired gentlemen who are interested in radios, but they also come out in case of a fire and help do radio dispatch. We have people who only want to do medics, and they come in, you know, on the first Monday of the month, and they get their medical refresher course for the day. You know, I'm looking to become an officer someday, and so my time requirements are more. You know, if you want to be an officer, you don't just get to come to drill on Monday. You know, you kind of have to come in and do other, like, leadership role type stuff. So it could be, depending on what you're into, you could be at the station 3 days a week, you know, doing stuff. And, you know, I'm about to have my first child in 3 weeks, and so, you know, my time requirements are going to change. But just, you know, if it's just like anything, if it's a lifestyle mm-hmm. that you want to get into, it's not a burden. You know, you're like getting on the engine and going and do something is not like, oh, my day is ruined. No, it's like, you know, awesome. We get to go out and do, you know, it's like being a football player and you practice a lot. You want to go to the game too. And so, you know, when you get the call to go help someone, you know, you're glad that you put in all that time to prepare yourself. You know, because I've gone one, since I've been with the station, I've been trained enough to go into one interior attack for a house fire on the Prez area. It was a 4-plex and room and contents fire. And, you know, when you get in there and you can't see anything and you can feel that heat, like you wish you had twice as much training.
Right. And first of all, congratulations.
Thanks.
Second of all, what is your day job? I'd be curious to know.
So I'm a computer guy. I've been doing, you know, IT work for since I got out of the Marines. And it's a very sedentary job. You sit, you type, you click. You know, it's, you do think a lot, but it's pretty, you know, you could atrophy if you just sat there and that's all you did. And so for me to go and do something like firefighting where I'm using chainsaws and axes and sledgehammers and, you know, learning how to operate a pump panel and hydraulics, you know, and all that sort of stuff that goes with that, it gives me a balance to my life, you know. So for me, it's a perfect fit. But every single person in that station, while we all broadly are there to help others, we all have our own reasons. You know, some people do it for camaraderie. You know, when drill's over, a lot of the guys hang around for another 34 minutes, you know, jawjacking and talking to each other about their life and telling old stories. And we have a wide variety of volunteers. We have people that are fishermen. We have people that are computer guys like me. We have people who are former firefighters. We have, you know, people who are
Department of Highways.
Yeah, DOT employees that are all, you know, all joined with one, you know, interest. And that's great. You know, just that alone makes it, you know, worth it. You know, we don't have social clubs so much anymore, you know, Elks and things like that. But it's very similar to that. So some people do it for those reasons. Some people do it, you know, for the excitement, you know, whatever. But, you know, for me, it's more about life balance.
Right. And Chief Rue, if someone were to enter as a volunteer, what would be some of the first things they experience?
Well, the first thing is I got to find out what their interests are. Maybe they don't want to be a fireman. Maybe they want to do EMS. Maybe they want to do CARES. I can find a spot for somebody in the fire department. We'll get them. They come in, and we'll start them as being a fireman and see what their interests are and what they want to do. You know, we have enough opportunities to let things go.
Looking for right now is people who want to work with children. Yeah. You know, fire prevention, where we do education for school kids and
good point, Jason,
and station tours, and that right there, you don't have, you know, you could be someone who fought fire 20 years ago and you're just thinking about getting back into it. We could use you to come in and teach children how to stop, drop, and roll. I'm not sure, I don't want to speak to their sort of time, but they do so much training. They don't really, from what I've seen, have a lot of time to go into the schools, you know, and teach every class how to do stop, drop, and roll. And I spot a firefighter. So, that's something that Bayside has picked up.
Yeah, and that's one of the good things with us working together is because you're right, our call volume and the amount of training that we have to do to maintain really come into play, and that's where, again, it's something else that we're getting together with.
All right, so we are out of time, but we've been speaking with James Mulligan, Chief James Mulligan, and Chief Howard Rue. Thank you guys so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Pleasure.